From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm Marnie Moscowane, filling in for Terry Gross. On today's Fresh Air, the treatment of abandoned children in China's state-run orphanages. A new report issued by Human Rights Watch finds that there's a staggering death rate in China's orphanages, sometimes amounting to what they describe as a systematic program of child elimination. We'll talk with Sydney Jones of Human Rights Watch Asia and with British filmmaker Kate Blewett. Blewett visited Chinese orphanages with a concealed camera. Her film, The Dying Rooms, will be shown tomorrow night on Cinemax. And we'll hear from some of the critics of the report. Janice Nielsen, who's worked with China's state-run orphanages, and Kay Johnson, an expert on adoption and abandonment in China. That's all coming up on today's Fresh Air. First, the news.
Contrasting your view of the future versus the view that exists from others, and I believe the president will provide his vision. I think it'll be pretty clear, and he will, in some cases, directly contrast that vision with the one suggested by his political opponents.
Presidential aides say tonight's speech could be nearly as long as last year's, which ran over an hour and 20 minutes. Senate Majority Leader Bob Dole will deliver the Republican response. A judge in Michigan has ruled that a 69-year-old man with Alzheimer's disease should remain in the custody of a son who wants him to live, rather than with other family members who may try to take him to see assisted suicide advocate Dr. Jack Kevorkian. Some experts have called the case the first in the nation in which someone has gone to court to thwart the assisted suicide of a family member. The man who assassinated Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin said in court today that although he shot Rabin, he did not intend to kill him. Yigal Amir told the court in Tel Aviv that he had only wanted to remove Rabin from his post. Amir's remarks today prompted one of his defense lawyers to resign. The BBC's Stephen Sacker has more on the story.
After a private conversation with his defense lawyers, Yigal Amir returned to the Tel Aviv courtroom and told the three presiding judges that he had indeed shot Yitzhak Rabin, but he hadn't intended to kill him. He aimed for the spine, trying to paralyze Mr. Rabin. I simply wanted to stop him being prime minister, the defendant said. Having completed his statement, Amir then exclaimed, "I don't regret it," to the packed courtroom. Having considered his statement, the three judges decided the trial should proceed. At issue now is one basic question. Was Amir's murderous act premeditated or not? If the court finds that it was, he faces an obligatory sentence of life in prison. If not, the maximum punishment would be 20 years.
Stephen Sacker in Tel Aviv. Former South Korean presidents Chun Doo-hwan and No Tae-woo have been indicted on treason charges stemming from a bloody crackdown on pro-democracy protesters nearly 16 years ago. The two already face charges that they took huge bribes and headed a coup that carried them to power. Sun Microsystems is reportedly preparing a bid for Apple Computer. The Wall Street Journal says a deal is imminent. Apple last week reported $69 million in losses in the last quarter and announced the layoff of 1,300 employees. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 35 points at 5,184 in heavy trading. In the over-the-counter market, the Nasdaq Composite Index is down a fraction of a point. This is NPR News. The American Medical Association is calling for an end to provisions in managed care plan agreements that bar participating doctors from outlining treatment options not covered by the plans. UPI's Jay Saper reports.
The AMA wants to dump gag orders from managed care contracts. The group calls it an unethical interference in the doctor-patient relationship that sometimes prevents very sick patients from seeing specialists. The AMA is urging doctors to provide patients with all information regardless of the limitations of health plans. It says it will stand behind doctors who believe violating gag clauses will get them in trouble. As AMA President Lonnie Bristow puts it, if that means referring patients to physicians outside their plans or telling patients about treatments their plans don't cover, so be it. Jay Saper, Chicago.
Bell South Corporation is reporting losses of over $1 billion for last year. More from Adam Hochberg.
Bell South, the regional telephone company in the southeast, suffered losses of $161 million for the fourth quarter of 1995 and losses of $1.2 billion for the entire year. The company says the losses are mainly the result of a $1.1 billion charge to pay the cost of eliminating jobs. Bell South has announced plans to cut more than 11,000 jobs over the next 2 years. In addition, the company says its profits were affected by a one-time bookkeeping change that was necessary to keep pace with reduced government regulations. The $1.2 billion loss in 1995 compares to a $2.2 billion gain in 1994. Bell South officials say last year's losses were necessary to reposition the company so that it can make long-term profits in the changing telecommunications industry. I'm Adam Hochberg reporting.
Colombian President Ernesto Samper called an emergency cabinet meeting today after a former defense minister charged that Samper knew that drug money was being used to underwrite his last election campaign. Samper has repeatedly denied that. I'm Craig Windham, National Public Radio News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen in for Terry Gross. Earlier this month, Human Rights Watch Asia released a report charging that China engaged in a, quote, systematic program of child elimination. The report, called Death by Default, alleges that the Chinese government allows children living in state-run orphanages to die from malnutrition and neglect. The evidence they cite comes from a physician, Dr. Zhang Shuyun, who worked at the Shanghai Children's Welfare Institute from 1988 to 1993. She smuggled documents from the institute, which she says shows that inordinate numbers of children died while in state care. Based on her testimony, on interviews with staff and former residents, and a review of records, Human Rights Watch Asia has publicly accused the Chinese government of a deliberate policy that targets certain children in orphanages for death. Critics of the report question its conclusions and fear that it will hinder future adoptions. Today on Fresh Air, we talk to a number of different people who have investigated conditions at various Chinese orphanages. We begin with Sydney Jones, the executive director of Human Rights Watch Asia. Their report says that there was a policy at the Shanghai Institute called summary resolution. I asked her to explain.
This was a very sinister policy which basically amounted to systematic elimination of certain groups of children. Effectively, sometime after the child was admitted, often as an infant, to the orphanage, there would be a meeting of child care workers who would get together and effectively decide who was going to live and who was going to die. And they made a decision based on ease of their own workload, it seemed. That is, the children who were most difficult to care for, who had the most physical handicaps, or in some cases who weren't very nice to look at, or in some cases who had disciplinary problems, were the ones chosen for this procedure. And it meant that thereafter, after this summary resolution consultation took place, they would effectively be denied food, sometimes water, and certainly medical treatment.
It's a very serious charge. Do you have evidence? Do you have things in writing that shows that there was such a policy?
There are two forms of evidence. We have the very clear written evidence of these medical case histories where you can go through for each child who died and chart the progressive decline from the day they were admitted, usually as healthy children, although sometimes with severe handicaps, and look at the way their weight declined, which indicated denial of food, and certainly the cause of death, which is on these medical history forms, which is often recorded as severe malnutrition. In addition to these case histories, we have the testimony of Dr. Zhang herself, who found out about this process of summary resolution and tried to stop it, but unsuccessfully.
Could there be any other explanation for the numbers of deaths? And we'll get into some of the statistics cited in your report. But for instance, an influenza epidemic that might sweep through an orphanage and thereby kill many young children. Are there any alternate explanations to the ones that you came up with?
I wish there were, but there don't seem to be. And the problem is the data that indicates cause of death on these medical history forms. Most of the causes of death fall into four categories either this completely spurious cause called congenital malformation of the brain. This isn't a cause of death, but yet this is the one of the primary reasons given for death in some of the slips used to cremate the children. A second cause is severe malnutrition. This, again, may be a real cause of death, but it certainly is one that could be prevented. There's no reason why children should die of malnutrition, especially because it's not a question of the Institute not having enough funds and so on. In addition to the causes of death, which are an indication that they were needless, there's also just the very high mortality rates, which are about 50 to 70%, which is higher than the death rates in Romanian institutions under Ceausescu.
Did you put these statistics to members of the Chinese government or to people that run the Institute now for their explanation?
We both tried to get a reaction from the Chinese government. The Chinese government reacted more to journalist queries than to our own. But the interesting thing is that when journalists were taken on a tour of the Shanghai Children's Welfare Institute just a few weeks ago and questioned one of the people we name in the report as being responsible for some of the abuses, Dr. Hanwei Cheng, for his explanation, he said, yes, indeed, there had been a very high mortality rate, but it was due to other factors, either such as very cold winters. Well, that doesn't explain malnutrition as a cause of death. Or the fact that children were so ill when they came in that there was no hope of saving them. Well, these medical histories indicate that many of the children who died were, in fact, healthy when they came in.
One of the people mentioned in your report is someone who lived in the orphanage for some time named Ai Ming.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Ai Ming was a child who was admitted at a very young age as a polio victim, had malformation of his legs. And he effectively grew up in the orphanage, one of the very few people who survived to adulthood. And he describes horrendous conditions from having himself to carry a corpse of a dead orphan to the crematorium to punishments for disciplinary problems, such as being hung upside down with your head in a pail of water until you nearly suffocate. And this was only one form of a number of different kinds of abuses that effectively amount to torture.
Again, these are extraordinarily serious charges about a very serious situation in one orphanage. I almost hate to ask a question like this, but when you hear about stories like that, do you believe that they're true? Or how do you go about finding whether they're true or not?
Unfortunately, the documentary evidence for abuse in this particular orphanage is overwhelming. And I stress that it goes up to 93. From the last 2 years, the situation has improved considerably, and it's now become an effective international showcase for visitors. But the abuses have been documented not only through written records, but through extensive interviews with people who themselves had experienced this. This is firsthand testimony. It's not hearsay.
So this is based on the testimony of people who lived and worked at this particular orphanage?
Yes.
As you say, in 1993, things seemed to change at this Shanghai Institute. Was there then some kind of internal investigation, some kind of expose that brought about some of these changes?
I think that the authorities did get concerned about first, the local investigation in 1991, even though they suppressed it a year later, they stopped it before it could actually reach any kind of public conclusion. At the same time, however, it became clear that there was a lucrative business involved in foreign adoption, so that this place in particular became a very well-kept, well-organized, well-run institute because it was one that was visited very frequently by foreign visitors.
Why then release this report? It's early 1996. If things have improved at this Shanghai Institute, what purpose does this report serve?
We believe that what was going on at the Shanghai Institute from 1988 to 1993, that's so well documented in this report, was first of all going on nationally and is still going on, except in this particular institute. We believe that a number of children who were at the Shanghai Institute have been transferred to a second facility in Shanghai. There are reports of abuses emerging from that particular institute. There are similar mortality rates to what was happening in Shanghai at virtually every other state-run children's welfare institute in the country, and there are 67 of them altogether. So we're concerned that even though one or two or three institutes may be cleaned up for foreign visitors, in fact, this is a systemic problem and needs to be addressed that way.
And that's based on the kind of statistical analysis that you've done on admissions and then death rates?
That's right. And the Chinese government itself stopped publishing statistics on mortality rates in 1989, and one of the reasons we think they did so was because the evidence was so appalling. I mean, there were institutes that had a 90% death rate. There were virtually no children coming out of these institutes alive.
Sydney Jones is our guest, and she is the executive director of Human Rights Watch Asia, and they've just come out with a report called Death by Default, a Policy of Fatal Neglect in China's State Orphanages. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sydney Jones, and she's the executive director of Human Rights Watch Asia, and we're talking about a report that her organization has just come out with called Death by Default, and it's a look at China's state orphanages. This report has been criticized by a number of adoption agencies who have a very different kind of impression of orphanages in China. What do you say in response to their criticism?
First of all, let me say that we understand the anguish that a lot of adoption agencies and families waiting for adoptions are going through, because the implications of this report are very alarming for them. Many of the people who have gone to China to adopt children have seen the kinds of conditions that the journalists saw when they went to the Shanghai Institute. That is, they've seen clean, well-lit rooms, they've seen apparently attentive staff, and the children that they've come home with have been in good physical condition. We don't believe they saw the whole picture. And one of the things that we're concerned about is that the children who are suffering from severe handicaps or who are severely disabled are not on display for foreign visitors, and that their fate is not anywhere near what the fate is of some of the children who are brought home to the United States or other countries, and that it's very important that adoption agencies as well understand that there's a very serious problem here that they actually might be in a position to solve.
There's some concern on the part of a number of international adoption agencies that this report could force the Chinese government to stop U.S. adoptions, thereby, of course, hurting children in need of families. Does that concern you as well?
It does concern us, and we've gotten some indication that some pending adoptions have been suspended. First of all, we believe the suspension, if it does occur, is only going to be temporary. And secondly, we just want to remind people that foreign adoptions are a tiny proportion of the number of children who are in these institutes, and the number of children, for that matter, abandoned every year. And if by exposing these abuses, we can try and get some kind of better life or a life at all for these thousands of children who aren't so lucky to come out of the adoption system, then I think we'll be doing a service for everybody. I think this is a case where it's possible to have it both ways, both to get the exposure of the abuses and to try and stop them, and to have the adoptions continue. And that's what I earnestly hope is going to happen.
China, of course, has this one child per family policy. Do you see that policy needs to be changed?
The Chinese one child policy is a governmental policy on family planning, and there's nothing wrong with a government family planning policy per se, as long as it's implemented in a humane way. If a consequence of the one-child policy is the abandonment of large numbers of female children, then it's got to be the state's responsibility to have some provision for caring for those children, and that's not what's happening at the moment. Obviously, we'd rather that no children were abandoned at all, and if there's anything that could be done to stop that, that should be certainly done immediately. But failing that, then there's got to be some mechanism run by the government for taking care of a problem that its own policies have generated.
Within China, do they have a policy of adoption?
This is another real problem, because if there were a domestic adoption possibility, that would provide a way of taking care of a lot of the children who are instead, we believe, selected to die. The problem with the adoption law in China is that adopted children are treated like naturally born children, so that families who already have a child of their own are not allowed to adopt another child. This would be in violation of the one-child policy. Also, couples who are under the age of 35 are also not allowed to adopt, because there's always the possibility that they will have a child of their own. So with domestic adoption so drastically restricted, it means there's no alternative in terms of adoptions or foster care for the children in these institutions. So we believe one of the things that's terribly necessary is repeal of this adoption law, or at least amending the law to make it easier for Chinese couples to adopt children.
Where do you go from here? Where does Human Rights Watch then take this report and investigation?
I think what we want to do is two things. One, we want to do further research to see what conditions are like at some other orphanage, and we want to try to get as much transparency as possible into the system. So it's research and advocacy combined. We also want to seek the help of as many other governments, agencies, other institutions, professional associations like doctors, pediatricians, and so on, to help us get some of this information. We want to see whether some of the organizations which have good relations with China, such as some of the sister city programs, might be able to help bring about exchanges so that Chinese orphanage staff might be able to come over here, allowing expatriate U.S. or other nationality doctors and other qualified medical personnel to go over to China. And again, in the interest of transparency, looking to see what's going on at these institutions.
So you're really talking about working then with adoption agencies who have ongoing relationships with orphanages in China. And I assume that the Chinese government to some degree as well.
Yes, I think we want very much to work as much as possible with the adoption agencies because, as I say, I think they're in a very good position to be able to press in their own way. And this is a very quiet role that we want them to play, to open up the system and find out more about what's going on. Just curiosity, asking questions, that can be extremely important.
Well, Sydney Jones, I thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Sydney Jones is Executive Director of Human Rights Watch Asia. Their report on the inhumane treatment of Chinese orphans has been criticized by a number of international adoption agencies. They say while there are problems in Chinese public orphanages, it's difficult to accept the report's conclusion that the Chinese government condones or endorses a policy of suffering and neglect. Janice Nielsen is executive director of the World Association for Children and Parents, an adoption agency which has been working in various countries around the world for the last two decades. She's visited a number of Chinese orphanages in the last 5 years for her agencies. I asked her to tell us about the conditions she has observed in China.
I have been openly allowed into the institutions and have viewed conditions which to me are very similar to conditions I've seen in developing countries around the world. They are not, of course, conditions that are the standard that we expect in the Western world, but they must be viewed through the window of the developing country that China is. Children in institutional care, of course, do not have the kind of individual attention that they need. Fewer caregivers than what we would want for a child. There are institutions that in the early years particularly might have had heat that was lacking, paint that was peeling on the walls. But the people within these institutions are who I have come to know, and they are not the calloused bureaucrats described in this report. Caregivers of children, you know, Chinese people love children just like we do. And we've had many adoptive families now travel to China. And when those children leave, it is a tearful separation from caregivers who've come to know and love them. So my experience has been to see children who are in institutional care, as it is very similarly found all over the developing world.
How much money does China get for every international adoption?
The Chinese government requires the donation to an orphanage of $3,000. In cases of older and special needs and disabled kids, that is often waived.
And $3,000, is that, I assume that's considered a lot of money in China, is it?
It is a lot of money in China.
Is that enough to keep several children cared for over a year's time?
Well, we've watched since 1992 when the adoptions rose to a certain point. We've seen institutions change with those donations. Places that were cold now have adequate heat. Buildings where paint was peeling have now been painted. Caregivers have increased. So we've seen the results. It is a lot of money in China. But we've seen it go, and I've been happy to see the change in institutions as a result of those donations.
Are you concerned that this report is going to hurt your work, and as you say, your concern for finding the best care for children in orphanages in China?
I have been reassured by those in charge of adoption matters in China that the work is continuing and that those with whom we are working on our child welfare projects. So I know there is great concern across the United States and speculation, but I believe that the work is continuing.
You're going to China?
I am.
Are you going to take some of those concerns with you? Are you going to address anyone there, either at orphanages, institutions, or at the government level about whether these reports are true or not?
I am going to be bringing copies of the report and responses in the United States, which officials in the government are anxious to be able to read firsthand. And I expect that there will be candid discussions, as there have been from the beginning, not hiding problems with those who work directly over orphanage care, but talking about what are solutions. You know, it's easy to lay blame. It's a lot harder to roll up your sleeves and get to work and try to bring help to children.
Janice Nielsen is Executive Director of the World Association for Children and Parents. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, we continue our discussion of the treatment of children in China's state-run orphanages with Kay Ann Johnson, who has researched abandonment and adoption in China and is familiar with institutional care for children in China, and with filmmaker Kate Blewett, who documented abuses in China's state-run orphanages in the documentary The Dying Rooms. Thank you. This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Earlier this month, Human Rights Watch Asia released a report, Death by Default, which charged that the Chinese government operates a system of child elimination in its state-run orphanages. They allege that some orphanages in China are virtual death camps, where as many as 70% of the children died in 1 year. Critics of the report say that, yes, conditions in many Chinese orphanages are severe due to lack of resources, but there is no evidence of a policy of extermination. China scholar Kay Ann Johnson teaches at Hampshire College and is doing research on child abandonment, orphanage care, and population policy in China. She has visited several orphanages in four Chinese provinces. In 1991, she adopted a Chinese girl who had been abandoned and brought to an orphanage. I asked Kay Ann Johnson what she found most troubling in the Human Rights Watch report.
What I primarily find troubling are their conclusions, which I find are do not necessarily flow from their evidence. I think that they've made huge leaps in looking at two pieces of evidence and putting them together in this kind of tight causal relationship. And one piece of evidence has to do with what they found in Shanghai, one particular orphanage, and evidence of abuse that they found. The other type of evidence that they have are statistics on national death rates, mortality rates, in one particular year in China, and they're figures that are put out by the Civil Affairs Bureau, and I believe them to be largely representative and suggestive of the true situation. But they put these two pieces of evidence together. Evidence in one institution of what appears to be intentional true abuse by staff members, and these very high mortality rates that occur in other orphanages in a number of provinces, and they argue that it adds up to proof of a national level policy of, in effect, exterminating children in orphanages. Apparently, the argument is in order to keep the population of abandoned children down and to keep it at an even, steady state.
Well, the death rates, and talking about this particular orphanage, the Shanghai Children's Welfare Institute, the death rates ranged as high as 80%, from 50 to 80%. What could be an explanation for death rates that high?
Well, and as I say, I don't know anything about the Shanghai orphanage. I have never been there. But the orphanages that I do know about, and the one that I particularly know a great deal about, their death rates, it depends on how you calculate them. They end up being calculated in various ways. And one way is just to look at the entering population in 1 year and then look at the survival rate for that entering population. And they approached 40 or 50% in the places that I looked at. And the reasons were varied. There are a number of reasons, all of which Human Rights Watch rejects as possible explanations for such high death rates. One is because abandoned children who enter the orphanages are extremely sick at the time that they enter, extremely sick, and a high percentage of them are disabled in addition to being quite ill. The act of abandonment itself is extremely hard on infants. At the time that they come in, they suffer from dehydration, from exposure. They may have been become quite ill during the process of being moved. Many of these children who are abandoned are brought great distances to be abandoned in places far from their home, in public places. And that experience itself for a young infant can bring what might have been a few weeks earlier a fundamentally healthy child, can make her extremely ill.
So you're saying then, in talking about the population at Chinese orphanages, that these are children at risk And
at extremely high risk. And then they enter an orphanage. An orphanage is in 1990, during the period they're talking about, where more under-resourced and understaffed than they are today. Many of these orphanages have improved in recent years. But right then they were meeting what was a growing and fairly new crisis of abandonment. Their numbers were rapidly escalating. They were not prepared to handle it. So you get very weak infants, maybe 50% of them disabled, some of them severely disabled, brought into an institution that's not prepared and doesn't have the resources to handle such fragile and sick children.
So is an orphanage, or are the kinds of orphanages that you visited, a kind of hospice, a place where children, where babies go to die?
I believe that the orphanage that I saw the most of was, in fact, used as a hospice, in part, not entirely, but it was partly served as a hospice. It was being used as a hospice. Often parents abandon children because they are terminally ill, because they are extremely ill. Hospitals bring terminally ill children whose parents have run off, finding out that the child is going to die, cannot be cured, leaves the child in the hospital and runs away. And the hospitals, the local hospitals, routinely brought these children to the orphanage, saying, these children are not going to live. We can't save these children. So rather than letting them die in hospital, they bring them to the orphanage to die. There's absolutely no doubt that the orphanage was presented with a large number of children who were dying and who the orphanage could not save within the means that they had.
Would you say, and it's always hard to judge another country by Western standards, but would you say that these children were getting the best possible care they could under the circumstances?
That the orphanage confronted was the need to make choices with the resources that they had. And, of course, you can't compare it to the sort of medical care that we would expect to be provided in this country. You have to compare it with, an average Chinese medical facility. And in this case, it would, not the finest medical facilities in Beijing or Shanghai, but an average medical facility. And given their resources, and given that this is a welfare institution that was underfunded, as welfare institutions are in many countries, I think that the orphanage staff chose very carefully and did the best they could to help as many children as they could with the resources they had. And I think what that meant was that in fact, children who were terminally ill, who were unlikely to be saved, again, within the medical means that they had at their disposal, were let go. And children who were fundamentally healthy and who you could save were given medical treatment that was quite expensive, so that resources went into saving the lives of children such as my daughter, who was severely ill when she came in and required several weeks of intensive care in a local hospital and received it. And, they gave it to her, and she recovered, and she gained an enormous amount of weight under their care in the hospital, actually, because when they got rid of the infection, she began to thrive. She began to eat and to put on weight. When I was there, I saw at least a half a dozen other children who had the same treatment, apparently for the same for pneumonia, I had assumed it was for respiratory infections. Mm-hmm. Also costing the orphanage 800 to 1,000 renminbi apiece for this standard two-week treatment in the hospital.
Could that be what you just described, the kinds of terrible choices that staff and orphanages have to make? Could that be construed as a policy where some children are allowed to live and others are left to die?
Well, as a policy, I'm not sure how you would construe that as a policy. That's a fact of life, living, trying to handle a crisis situation and doing it within the constraints of your resources.
Let me ask you about...
And I don't know that there are national... I saw no evidence of there being national guidelines of any sort on this. These orphanages in these years, anyway, were run in a very decentralized way. I noticed some of them were open, some of them were closed. It seemed to depend quite a bit on the leadership abilities and the personality of the people who were in charge of it, the director, vice director, and their connections to the local civil affairs authorities. So that the orphanage that I visited and knew well was a relatively open institution where people talked fairly freely about their problems. There are others that were not being run in that way in those years.
My guest is China scholar Kay Ann Johnson. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Kay Ann Johnson. We're discussing the Human Rights Watch report on Chinese orphanages. We talked about some of the family planning issues that result in so many abandoned children, including China's policy of one child per family. I asked her about the proposal to amend the one child policy to include two children if one of them is adopted.
The one child policy logically has to do with births, how many children you give birth to. And these are foundlings who have already been given birth to and who exist in state institutions who are clearly abandoned. And it seems to me that without damaging the one-child policy, that they could allow people who have children to adopt these foundlings. Human Rights Watch argues that this law, which says that they... you have to be childless and over 35 in order to adopt a healthy foundling, is part of this policy of trying to limit the population of abandoned children. It's, in effect, an assertion that these children are illegal, they probably are all over-quota children, and they have no right to exist unless you can pair them up with a parent in China who is giving up their right to an only child or because of infertility has given up that right. And they can legitimize the existence of this child by adopting her. I don't think that that's the reasoning that went into this law at all. I think what happened in the 1980s was that the Chinese government discovered that informal adoption was being used as a means of circulating girls and getting around family planning. And the rate of adoption increased very rapidly during that period. Demographers have surmised from sample surveys. And people were, if they gave birth to a second child, and they had a daughter, they gave birth to another daughter, they would find somebody, friends of relatives to adopt her. And then they would be able to try again to have a son. And I think that the adoption law that was passed in the early 1990s was an effort to put an end to this and to have a legal mechanism for trying to bring this under control and to pay more attention to this circulating of children through adoption. It doesn't make sense, from the perspective of the orphanages. And I think that orphanage directors do not like it as a law. It used to be a regulation, and when they had too many children, they were at liberty to increase, to find adoptive homes of people who already had children. But this is one of these irrational, kind of a bureaucratic, when you put the problem of abandonment together with this law on adoption, it leads to very serious problems for orphanages who want to find adoptive homes for their children.
There's a British documentary called The Dying Rooms, which is an expose of certain orphanages in China. And the producers of the documentary lied their way into orphanages, bringing cameras, hidden cameras, and videotaped what they saw. What they saw and what you see on tape are children who are tied to commodes, babies propped up in beds with bottles propped up next to them, very little human contact. And in one case, a picture of a child who's literally close to death. Mm-hmm. As someone who looks at that documentary, how are we supposed to understand what it's showing us? Is this a kind of a standard picture of the unfortunate way that things are in orphanages in China?
I don't think it's a standard picture. First of all, there is a cultural lens that needs to be, you need to understand that our cultural lens is somewhat different. And I have Chinese friends who see children tied over commodes and remember their own childhood. That's the restraint of children in Chinese culture is not considered a violation of human rights, as it is, you know, we're warned about leaving children in playpens and so on and so forth. So there's some cultural mediation that needs to go on in looking at this. Now, obviously, to leave children tied, if, you know, they came in and saw this and say it happens for a couple of hours a day, you know, for an hour and then a few times a day to toilet train the children, that's one thing. They claim, although they didn't see this, that the children were left tied for 12 hours or for some long period of time. That's obviously a different affair. What they saw, I think, are conditions that do exist in some orphanages. Are they common? I never saw the toddlers in the orphanage that I went to tied. I saw some of them in wooden seats, like high chairs, that had, you know, they were in, they couldn't get out of it by themselves. And they don't have lots of toys, those years they didn't have lots of toys, and so on. The infant with the bottles propped up, I think, in those years, and continuing probably in some overcrowded places, an unfortunate result of having too many children and not enough staff. And the lack of human contact is a very serious problem. Institutions are terrible places to nurture infants. They do not do well. Historically, orphanages have always had higher death rates than the population, you know, the surrounding population of children and families. That's, you know, whether it's 19th century Italy, early 20th century America, orphanages in China before 1949, they always have higher death rates and morbidity rates. And one of the reasons is that children need to be held and need much more human contact than they get in these orphanages.
What is the best way to bring about improvement and reform in the orphanages in China?
I think by having people within China, pressuring for these kinds of changes. Human Rights Watch, you know, standing up and vilifying, demonizing the Chinese and basically accusing them of a Holocaust and, you know, sort of screaming at the Chinese leaders, mass murderers, and then saying, now change your ways, is an effective way of doing it. But there are people in China who are people think about and question the domestic adoption law, the rationality of that. There's been a movement to give donations to help improve conditions in orphanages. People are more aware of these problems. And I think, you know, frankly, it's going to, you know, have to come from those kinds of changes and pressures within China to deal with this problem. Help keep an international adoption program open and moving, and that's of some help. But the real, you know, the real solutions obviously lie within China, lie within their domestic adoption programs, and better funding for the orphanages. And hopefully, one would hope, with some easing of population control efforts, some greater a bit of relaxation there would greatly lower the rate of abandonment.
Well, Kay Ann Johnson, I thank you for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Kay Ann Johnson teaches at Hampshire College and is doing research on child abandonment, orphanage care, and population policy in China. This is Fresh Air. Tomorrow night, Cinemax will air a film called The Dying Rooms, an expose of conditions in various Chinese orphanages. My guest, British filmmaker Kate Blewett, and her colleagues Brian Woods and Peter Hugh visited a dozen orphanages in China using false identities and a hidden camera to document the conditions and treatment they found. And they found children who appeared malnourished, neglected, and in some cases, left to die. They typically spent a couple of hours in each orphanage, and I asked her if she felt that was time enough to get an accurate picture of what happens to the children there.
Basically, the children's lives don't change, and the people working inside the orphanages were very happy to speak to us once we'd introduced ourselves and given our story. They were happy to stand and chat about how things did or did not work in the orphanage, and they told us about the death rates. They told us about the fact that they don't have enough medication or clothing for the children, that a lot of them die. They were not embarrassed. They weren't hiding anything. I don't think they were aware that there was anything wrong with the conditions inside the orphanages.
You know, I think what's very hard for the public to understand in a story like this and the kind of controversy that has come up about this, and a number of international adoption agencies have been critical of the Human Rights Watch report. There's been some criticism of your film as well over here in the States, is how the public is supposed to understand some of this contradictory evidence. On the one hand, we hear that that in developing poor countries, conditions in orphanages are pretty terrible, and that's an unfortunate result of being in a poor country. We look at your video, and we truly see children who are in desperate need of care and, in certain cases, truly suffering. How do you want the public to try to understand this issue when it is so complex and so full of people who care about children but have come to different kinds of conclusions about what to do about it?
I think the conditions of the children are there for everybody to see. First of all, the images that you see on the screen are real. They are the real lives of these children. And I think it needs no justification. It needs no explanation. We have documented what we found across China. The Human Rights Watch report gives very thorough, concrete, solid evidence that the abuses are consistent and widespread and that the death rate is extremely high. So there should be no question about whether it's fact or fiction. We're not trying to say the Chinese are wrong. We're saying these are the conditions inside the orphanages, and they need to do something about it if they wish to be part of the rest of the world, which they clearly do because they had the women's conference last year, and they're clearly very interested in being part of the world.
Your documentary also shows a privately run institution where the children appear to be very well cared for. Were you able to figure out what the difference was? Why, in some institutions, children seem to be truly left to their own devices, or we certainly see them in the documentary tied to potty chairs. And in other institutions, they're playing with toys and look like children who are quite happy with their life.
In the privately run orphanages, the children are in the hands of people who care about them, and that is the very, very significant difference between those in the state-run and in the privately run orphanages. The children we saw were loved, were cuddled, were not tied up, could run around, and they were totally happy children, with the younger ones being looked after by the older ones. And the only difference was the people caring for them. They had no more money. They survived on donations from within China, a lot of donations from within China. They had no more money than the other children in the orphanages. They were simply loved. And it was incredible, the difference between the children.
How do you explain a kind of policy difference or a kind of programmatic difference like that?
Because a lot of the people working in the state-run orphanages are put there and given their job. They are simply designated that job. And they might have no interest at all in children, whereas the children inside this privately run orphanage, they were volunteers, they were people that genuinely cared about children. And so without even payment, they were much, much kinder to the children.
We've spoken to several people about orphanages in China, and a number of them have said that the orphanage system is a highly decentralized system, a rather inefficient system, and one that certainly is flawed. The question is whether what you found and what Human Rights Watch Asia found is a policy of child elimination, or whether the deaths that you document, or that Human Rights Watch documents, are a result of neglect, disorganization, incompetence, a system that really doesn't work. How do you figure out the answer to that?
It's a very interesting question, and one that we've gone round and round in circles about. We have no direct evidence that there is a policy that the government say to the orphanages, you will let the children die. We have no evidence of that. But there is clear neglect inside the orphanages. And from what we have seen and learnt on our travels is that it is the orphanage workers that are responsible for the number of children that die. And it's sort of a policy with inside the different orphanages that have their own systems of dealing with the numbers. There is no documentation that proves it's a policy. But we do know for a fact that the government knows about the high death rates and the conditions. So the fact that they know it's going on means that they have chosen to do nothing about it.
Well, I thank you, Kate Blewett, for joining us today on Fresh Air.
It's my pleasure.
Filmmaker Kate Blewett, her film The Dying Rooms airs tomorrow night on Cinemax. Danny Miller is Fresh Air senior producer. Today's program was produced by Naomi Person with Alan Tu and Kathy Wolf. Technical direction from Audrey Bentham. For Terry Gross, I'm Marty Moss-Cohen.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Random House, publisher of Civil Action, a real-life action thriller by Jonathan Haar. Celebrating 25 years of radio excellence, this is NPR, National Public Radio.